In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Donnie V. He was the lead singer in the Chicago area power pop band Enough's Enough, on and off again from their inception till 2013. Prior to that and currently, he's also had a solo career going on. His latest single is Plain Jane. It's out on Wicked Cool Records. It's also a recent coolest song in the world. We hear a portion of it now, and afterwards, I'll be back with Donnie for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Coolest conversations time at Little Stephen's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and joining me, Donnie V, musician, singer, songwriter, best known as the lead vocalist of Enough's Enough. These days, he's pursuing a solo career that he started back in 2003. His latest single, Plain Jane, that is our coolest song in the world this week, out on Wicked Cool Records. Donnie, man, how are you doing?
I've been worse. Yeah, that's what I shoot for. That's what I shoot for nowadays.
You shoot for what?
That's how I find gratefulness at times where I'm feeling a little ungrateful. And yeah. I find it in the fact that things could be so much worse. So I'm thankful of that. Like, this could be happening and this could be happening. This person could die. And those aren't. So I find gratefulness in that. And it helps me out, you know, instead of just pissed off all the time, you know.
Well, I hope this is a good moment for you, man. Getting to chat some here.
This is great. This is fantastic. This is my first duty on my new label, Wicked Cool Records. My first official duty.
Right. Well, we're gonna talk about the coolest song and the album but first, you know, I wanted to ask you, like, are you from Chicago area?
Born and raised in Chicago. It's called Blue Island. It's just south of Chicago. It's basically South Chicago. It's called Blue Island. It's a pretty name. Prettier than it is, but it's not so bad.
Was there like a lot of music in your house growing up stuff? Did your parents play music or play the radio or have record collections?
Just me.
Really?
My father, he split when I was like two or whatever, so I didn't have a father. And my mother wasn't very encouraging or supportive, to say the least. And so I basically spent the music was in my head, you know. After I heard my first couple of records, I probably was five or six or something that I can actually remember hearing them, and it, you know, it all made sense to me immediately. I'm like, I heard it was a Beatles record. It was I think Ticket to Ride or something like that, and I don't remember exactly which one, but I just remember hearing the voices and the guitar and the riff and stuff, and I know that it's just bing bang. It's just like it hooked me, and there was nothing I could do ever since. I just, like, this is what I'm going to do, you know? And spent my time, a lot of my childhood alone. You know, I didn't really have a lot of friends or anything. And so I just pulled up and getting my chops together, you know, and probably by 10 or 11, I thought I was a pretty decent singer already. I was just waiting for my voice to change, you know? So once my voice changes, then I'll be cool, you know? And so and then, you know, got to, I never, really nobody ever knew that I did that though. You know, I would casually say I play guitar or whatever, but nobody really, had any idea. And, I was too insecure or shy to sing in front of people, you know, and I finally broke out, you know, but it took,
but you were playing guitar at that time. You started taking lessons or.
For lack of a better word. No, I never took any lessons. I actually went home and I had a guitar. I went home and actually learned how to play a couple songs on guitar and overnight I joined a band and I didn't know how to play yet. And I joined a band and I had rehearsal the next day and I needed to know two songs and I learned to play the guitar overnight.
What two songs did you learn how to play?
Twist and Shout and Rocky Raccoon. Both very easy if you played Twist and Shout in C, you know. No, that's not easy to play it right. I didn't play it anywhere near right, but I was there and I had something somebody could sing to, you know, and of course I was terrible, but I was just a guitar player though. I wasn't a singer and I should have been the singer.
And how old were you at the time?
At that time, probably 14.
14. Wow. Yeah. So you show off these songs and you started playing in a band with these guys when you were about 14.
Yeah, but I only played guitar. These guys sang and we did a lot of Beatles songs. And so it was killing me because I knew I kicked their ass singing at this stuff, but I was just too shy to sing. I never even told anybody I could sing. And then after a couple beers one day, my friend coaxed me into singing in front of people. And it was all took off from there.
So you, your friend coaxes you into singing. And was this, did you start singing then with a different band or the same group of guys?
In front of those guys, because, I was basically getting fired from the guitar because they found somebody that actually could play. And so I was all bummed out. I'm getting fired already, you know, cause I was no good. And then, and my friend was like, you got to hear him sing. And it's like, oh yeah, you can sing. He said, my buddy's like, you got to hear him. His name was Mark. And so he sets up an audition for me, which was like a nightmare to me. You set up an audition. Yeah. At 2 o'clock on Saturday, they're coming over to hear you sing a song. And I'm like, oh my God, there's shit in my pants. But I just closed my eyes and sang. And they're like, you know, he's like, man, he could sing Can't Buy Me Love just like the Beatles. And after I finished singing, they're like, well, it wasn't exactly like that, but you know, I knew that I was, they were cool. I loved those guys. I always played with supportive. Then when songwriting started is when I took off from all the other guys that I'd played with here and there. Just never was in anything more than a garage band, you know. Nuff's Enough was my first band.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell me about the songwriting then. So when did you come up with your first tune?
When I had my first girlfriend. They kind of go hand in hand, you know, especially at that age. And what else are you going to write about? Drinking beer and you don't know anything else, you know. It's my girlfriend. And that's where a girlfriend, that's a gold mine in songs, you know. A good girlfriend is you got all these great, beautiful love songs. And a bad girlfriend, you got all these brokenhearted songs or pissed off songs. Like that's what I started writing was like, you know, put.
So what songs was she the catalyst for? Like, were these good, some good, from initially, were they love songs and then came the breakup songs?
No, the first one was actually kind of just kind of like joking around with it, messing around with it. And I used her friend's name the first song was when I wasn't allowed to be with this girl because her parents didn't think I was a very good influence. And as a year older than her and she wasn't very attractive. And but it was something, you know what I mean? I didn't even talk to girls or anything. So it was something. And then her parents, her mother caught her and sent her to Greece for the summer, like completely just up and gone. And I didn't see her. And I was all feeling all madly in love and heartbroken and stuff. And I didn't know what to do. And I found solace in sitting there and writing this song and singing this song. And I found that, wow, this is really coming out of me and this is kind of making me feel better, you know? And before you know it, I had this song, and the first song I'd written was actually a pretty good song. You know, I was thinking of maybe recording it one day because it's actually a well-written song. You know, I came out of the gate knowing what I was doing by all studying the stuff that I'd studied through all the years, you know?
Right, right. Well, I'm intrigued. I'm ready to hear it. We're going to have to talk about some other songs in a moment, though. You formed Enough's Enough with Chips Enough. How did you guys even meet? You were part of the same local scene there in Blue Island?
No, he's a lot older than me. He was in a semi-professional band already that was playing around, and he kind of had some notoriety. They were like the best local band. They were called Worst Stay, and they were sort of a punk, pop punk thing. And he stood out from I used to go see them, and he stood out from everybody else. He just was cool. He was just the whole power pop thing about him. You could tell that everybody else, there was other annoying things about some of the other guys that are annoying, but he was cool. And so I aspired to, I never thought I'd be playing with him, you know, but I was wanting to get guys like that. Cause everything I'd done actually, I mean, there's no bass or anything. Like, I mean, it wasn't, nothing was ever a real band. You know what I mean? It was always just MacGyver thrown together, you know, drummer that can't really play this and that, nobody could do. So this was Enough's Enough was the first band, my first band I was ever in.
So you were saying that Chips was playing in this other band. You told me the name of the band, and then how did you wind up?
The singer in that band, who was very good, but I always thought it was a very annoying voice. But the singer, his younger brother was one of my friends at that point that I started hanging out with, and and I'd hooked up with his brother through him, which was, I never thought I'd be. And I was so, you know, I was totally ecstatic to just be hanging in that, up in that level of guys right there. And they're like, this kid can sing. You got to hear this kid sing. And everybody's like, well, you got to hear the guy sing. And they're handing me off here and there. And so I started recording a couple of songs with those guys. And I kept saying, hey, can you bring Chip down for bass? And the guy that was his singer was like, I'd rather try to do this without Chip. He goes, I've worked with Chip for quite a while now, and I'd really rather try to do this without him. I didn't know then what he knew at that point. I learned this stuff later on, you know, because he could be a handful. But he just brought him down one day, and I heard it, and I was like, you know, he just made everything glued together all of a sudden, where everything was like, These guys were trying to do something different and out there. Anything that felt natural, they felt they want to go against the grain to do something different, you know, our early 80s and stuff. And so he came down, and we had the exact same vision, you know. I mean, that's what I wanted to sound like, is what he made it sound like. And we just went out from there. We just bailed on those guys and went and started our own new band. Got a drummer, and I had to learn how to play guitar. That was the only guitar player. And I really did not know how to play very well. You know, I was just learning bar chords and stuff. And I was already writing, though, by then.
In fact, talking about the writing, so that the first album, self-titled one, Enough's Enough, because that's 89. Have got a couple of hits on there, a new thing. And also
November of 89. We got 1 month of the 80s. Is that just, you know, just their luck?
Yeah. Well, you're right. And okay, so new thing, Fly High Michelle, right? Fly High Michelle being the band's biggest hit. And you wrote that, right? That's my understanding. That's your tune.
I pretty much wrote, I would say, a bulk of it, you know, quite a bit of it. You know, Chip, I liked the songs where Chip would have an idea and he'd show it to me, you know, and basically I'd take his idea and then I'd write all the rest of it. You know, I have to finish it, write the words, arrange it, all of that stuff and the melodies and stuff. And I always liked those because that would take me to a place that I hadn't thought of on my own, you know, where his idea. And I'd go, oh, that's a whole new alley with different doors and stuff. And I'd go down there and he'd have a little piece of a chorus or something. I'd be like, wow, that's catchy. And I'd write all the rest of the song. You know, and or I wrote them myself.
And so with Fly High Michelle, is that Is that like a, is it a composite of a person, or is it a, she was a real person, or?
She was a friend. It wasn't exactly what it was. She was a friend, and she overdosed. I've had a lot of friends like that, have just overdosed on drugs, and just 1 minute they're here, the next they're gone. But the songwriting, I get these ideas that come to me from, I call them the song gods. You know what I mean? I've heard a lot of artists say the exact same thing. They're like given to them. So they gave me these ideas. And that particular song, I was walking to 7-Eleven to get a bottle of NyQuil so me and my guitar player could come down off all the blow they were doing. They didn't sell alcohol on Sundays. And I was walking on the way to, and all of a sudden, that's when the idea came in my head. And it's like, and I started work. By the time I got back to my apartment, I pretty much had the song in my head, and I got out the 8-track machine, and me and Derek just started recording Fly High Michelle. And by the morning we had a good demo of that sounds basically like what the record sounds like, including the intro with the boy and all that stuff. Cause that's where that came from. The keyboard I had laying around. It was really magical to watch. That's the first time I ever consciously was aware of that was like magic that just happened here. This is craziness. This isn't just a guy sitting down to write a song. This is something just happened and it was channeled through. And
oh, very cool. So you, with Enough's Enough, you guys, you form in 84, you leave like in 2002, you do some solo stuff then, and then you came back, you were back in the band 2008 to 2013. Is there a chance that you guys will get back together, or is the split is permanent going forward?
Well, at this point right now, we have completely two different visions, you know, with his vision of, you know, I'm an artist. He's a road dog. He wants to be on the, you know, he wants to be a road dog. And I'm an artist. You know what I mean? I care more. I have a lot more, I don't know. I put a lot more thought and love into certain, like the art, the evolution of it, the creating this and that, you know, and giving to the fans the most, you know, he's been a workhorse, you know, and basically sticks to the same set list for like 20 years. Like, they want to hear the hits, brother. They just want to hear the hits. They don't want to hear this. And if you go see Cheap Trick, you want to hear the hits. It's like, yeah, you want to hear the hits, but you also want to hear the other cool songs when we've got 13 great records of all these, this cool stuff. And our fans, they've been to every show. Of course, they want to hear new stuff. You know, we got to do some work, like this kind of work and not that kind of work. And then with songwriting, we have a lot of differences in opinion. And, you know, it's no good guy. There's no bad guy. I was not in the frame of mind to take care of any business. So it was easy for people. I've handed over like the control and power basically to everybody along the lines until then when I wasn't happy with what was going down, you know, it's kind of like, then I'm kind of an asshole for now. I'm, you know, making a stink or whatever, but you know, I went against a lot of my intuition all the way through that whole thing from the very beginning. I felt like the combination of guys wasn't necessarily what I envisioned, and I didn't see it necessarily having any staying power because the drummer and the guitar player were from completely different planets, you know, and didn't even have a clue of that vein of you know, and agendas, and everybody was so good. Everybody has their own agenda, you know, and their own egos and stuff. And yeah, Chip and I, we were on the same planet, you know, but those guys. And so, but who's going to walk away from, you know, a huge record deal, millions of dollars. And so let's go make your record and make your videos and all of this and that, and just get out of Palookaville, which I'd been my whole life, and go do something. I'm not going to say, well, hey, I feel a little bit that this is necessarily natural to me or whatever, you know, and I just kind of got fast tracked from just learning all the way to being a lead singer of a band on MTV with hits. You know, I mean, it was like overnight, and there's a lot of steps in the evolution that I kind of missed, you know, that would have prepared me more for, you know.
Well, one last thing about the Enough's Enough era. So they were inducted into, the band was inducted into the Illinois Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Enough's Enough was inducted into the Illinois Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But it was the original Enough's Enough. You know, of course it was. Obviously, that's what I mean. He actually tried to go there with just those guys, but that wasn't going to happen. So it was fun. It was a fun night. It's kind of, I felt like a closure that night because, you know, our vibes together, he's already got his Enough's Enough and they do their whole own thing. Then there's my Enough's Enough, you know, that's basically a memory. And this night, you know, to collect the award and be celebrated for what we've done. And it's possibly in the summer, we're discussing doing maybe one show.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk some about your artistry and the future and stuff, right? We got this week, our coolest song of the world is Plain Jane. And I know that the single came out originally like in 2019. Has it been remastered, remixed or something now?
It wasn't really, you can't really say that the record was really released. You know, the record was made. We started out with Pledge Music, you know, that thing called Pledge Music.
Yeah.
Yeah. We went to go that route and we doubled the goal. We started making the record. It started costing some money and then they just disappeared and took everybody's money. And just, that's the end of it since Pledge Music is gone. So we got screwed on that. My sister had to take a loan on stuff because we were already 15 grand, 20 grand into making a record with everything that went along with it and paying some artists and stuff. And they really screwed. Like Paul Gilbert, he plays on Beautiful Things. He's the first song, but he made a record and he was doing it through Pledge Music and he raised a hell of a lot more money than I did. And all his fans would be waiting for the record. He got screwed. He's just sitting there with a record budget that he counted on, you know, that money. And that's terrible. And all my fans too, that donated. And I hadn't made a record. I've been out of business since like 2013 when I'd left Enough's Enough. And, so this was like my first coming back after getting clean and getting through this program and everything and ready to go again. And so excited about that. And all of a sudden that happened. It just threw everything off track. There was no record. I had nothing to give the fans. And so, like I said, my sister had taken a loan. I scraped everything I could get together and we paid. And we also took a really shitty little deal because they agreed part of the deal was to give me the CDs to give my fans that already paid for them on that.
Right. And we're talking here about the Beautiful Things album as it appeared originally like in 2019. So how did you wind up working now with Little Steven and being part of Wicked Cool? What happened here?
Well, the Beautiful Things, that record, I was so proud of it because I worked so hard on it and I think it's the best thing I've ever done. And it's just, you know, it really had no release, you know, it never got out. There was no exposure. No one's ever heard it. So that was pretty disheartening for me, you know, and then COVID came and I wasn't able to support it or anything like so. It's just like it just lay there and nobody really knew about it but my cult fan base, you know, loyal fan base. And so that's pretty disheartening. And after COVID and stuff, you know, having to put together a band and having to do things, is I don't have a lot of hustle or grift in me, you know. So that doesn't come naturally for me. And I was getting close to packing it in. And my girlfriend, she's very political, was listening to Little Steven, you know, she follows him on Twitter and this and that. And she's like, this guy, she's always telling me about this guy and things he says and his views and stuff. And I'm like, I know Little Steven. He used to come out and hang out in the studio with us in New York when we were making our records. He used to come out all the time and hang out and listen to songs and we'd hang out and he was cool. She's like, well, you should. He's got a radio show. They do. I said, well, yeah, you know what? Every now and then somebody, fans will text me and message me and tell me, hey, Little Steven just played one of your songs, Enough's Enough, on his show. And so I get a lot of messages just from that there. And so I was like, she's like, you know, you should see if you can get a hold of him. And it took me a little bit of tracking down and stuff. And I was like, that's a good idea. You know, he always loved what I did and he's got a thing. And so I reached out to him and got his email and sent him an email. I asked how I could submit to his label And he said, "What do you got?" And I sent him the first two songs, and he sent back and just says, "You're in." That was it. That was the whole email.
I want to talk specifically about Plain Jane. Some, you know, you mentioned your first girlfriend that inspired your first tunes there, and the song is Plain Jane. So you've got this connection with the Plain Janes going back to the very beginning. Then,
well, I mean, hot chicks. How many songs do they have? You know what I mean? Every single song's about the hot chick, either that or you know, the asshole. But you know, the ones that actually make good, they're good people, you know what I mean? That aren't shallow, that could raise your family and take care of you and be a good, you know, and actually work a job and have a career and all that stuff. The Plain Janes, you know, that aren't the hot chick and stuff. And I figure, well, there's a lot of them. You know, and then when, as the song idea just came to my head, you know, kind of that, I hear those vowels and syllables. So I'm just like, and it wasn't hard. I just landed on Plain Jane. I said, well, I said, the Plain Janes should like this song.
And so originally it was Beautiful Things comes out around 2019. Was that, how old is the song itself, Plain Jane? When did she first come to you? The vowels were forming when?
We were already recording the record. The dates are foggy to me. Like my whole life, the timeline is foggy. You know, so I can't really tell you dates and this and that unless somebody's usually there to tell me the date and all that stuff. But we were already recording the record, and that usually happens because you know, I'll have my batch of songs, and we picked, you know, this out of maybe 20, we'll pick 10 or whatever and get going. And,
and then
when the creative, you know, once you start recording them, the creativity is flowing and the energy is flowing and all the spirits and stuff are channeling through you and stuff. And so always you got to leave room for two or three that are going to get written during that period. And they're going to be really strong and not necessarily replace songs that aren't as good, but songs that don't fit as well as these written in the moment for this, you know, that all fit together. Like the Beautiful Things record, I think it feels like a perfect record, the way that they all connect and everything. And it's just magical.
Well, think about this. So this track, Plain Jane, is off of Beautiful Things. It's the single's out right now. And the whole album is going to get reissued on Wicked Cool sometime soon.
Yes, yes, sir.
Well, hey, so do you have it? So you've got the album's coming out again, and the single's out. Do you have any gigs lined up?
I have a few shows, odds and ends. I've been doing a lot of shows with a band called Zebra. They were out back and they're great guys, and
yeah,
and it's too big audiences and nice places and nice stages, and they're good to me. And you know, of course, if I have a show with them, we'll try to book something for me locally and wherever that's at and make those shows make sense financially, you know. And I have a few different lineups of guys, you know, one in the West area, some here in Chicago, you know, and then I have some up in New York area, and they're all great bands. You know, I'd like to have one consistent band, but financially it's a difficult thing out there to, you know, to make money.
Well, let's talk a moment about the B-side. You cover John Lennon's Instant Karma. This is the B-side of the new single. How is your own karma doing, man? How do you feel?
I think that I've paid off all of my shitty karma, I do believe, by now. And I think my karma that from the man I am these days, I think that my karma should be pretty good. And it looks like my luck is turning around a little bit, you know. It's got to be positive. And
well, what got you to record that tune? Why did the tune speak to you?
I was, I almost died of my pancreas melted. And I was in the hospital. And I almost died. And I was in there for a month or so. And I had a demo of it that I just had tracked while I was making Beautiful Things, you know, just messing around. I'm in this, everything's hooked up and stuff, you know. I do all that stuff by myself, and I just made a demo of it. And while I was in the hospital, I was a couple of buddies of mine heard it, and his name's Vinny Castaldo. He's out in Vegas, and everybody was really looking to be supportive and help me out at that time, you know. It's like, let's do something good for Donnie and all the fans. It was overwhelming, all the energy coming in. And so he went and just and retracked the drums and everything. And before you know it, I had a track that was tracked for real. I went out and sang it after I got out of the hospital, and we're like, well, let's do it, use it for something. And a couple of people got together and donated their skills and with video, you know, videoing it. And,
yeah,
you know, a good buddy of mine, Rob, had a piano out in the middle of the pier. He somehow got a piano out there in the freezing cold pier and a studio. And I got all these people in the studio and this choir singing, and it all came together out of love and people kind of looking out for me for one time, you know, and it was great. And so I didn't know what I was going to do with it though. You know, so I figured we'll just put it out there as by itself. You know, you always got to try to make some kind of thing for people to see so you can release the song on YouTube, you know? And so we were thinking, let's make something for, you know, what's a good thing? Well, bullying, because that's my nephew suffered from it. I suffered from it. So many people I know suffered from that when we were kids. And now there's cyberbullying. So, well, anti-bullying. And then we're looking at the list. At the end, it rolls the credits of that video, and it shows the ages of these kids and their names of when they killed themselves because they, you know, committed suicide due to, I mean, we're talking like kids at 11 years old killing himself because he's being bullied. That's so, he's a baby, you know? So I figured, well, that's good to at least to bring some awareness or whatever. So I had this guy edit it, and we put in as much of that as we could. And the same guy that got the piano had the whole student body of his son's school singing on the end of that. That's, and they're in the video as well. And yeah, they're all singing on it. We all shine on. It's really cool. Just out of love. It was all done out of love. That's like, that's a very cool thing.
Well, man, Donnie, thank you so much for rapping with me, talking with me on our coolest conversations.
Well, thank you very much. It was a cool interview. It didn't talk about all the same old things, you know, necessarily.
Well, we're going to take a listen to Instant Karma. It's Donnie V and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Instant Karma's going to get you. Gonna knock you right on the head. You better get yourself together. Pretty soon you're going to be dead. Gonna get you, gonna look you right in the face. You better get yourself together, darling. Join the human race. How the world you gonna see? Laughing at fools like me. Well, who on earth you think you are? A superstar.
V here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, sharing his Instant Karma with us, a cover of the John Lennon tune, and for Donnie, it's the B-side to his single Plain Jane, out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Donnie for joining me today for our coolest conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Banda AL9, they're a duo from Brazil, featuring the Curry brothers, that's guitarist Mateus and bassist Tiago. They've garnered quite an international following via TikTok, and they've got a debut single out now on Wicked Cool Records called She Can Do It All. Guitarist Mateus will join us next time around to tell us all about it, and that's your next Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy.
Make a big noise playing in the street.
I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.